Well, good morning. To my right is Judge Toth. To my left is Judge Jaquith, and I'm Chief Judge Allen. Before we begin, I just want to thank the students, faculty, and staff here at Rutgers Law School in Camden for the invitation to come and hear oral argument. We do this around the United States from time to time, and we really appreciate it. So thank you very much. This morning, we're convened to consider the arguments in the case of Sharon A. Westfall, case number 23-5171 versus Douglas A. Collins, Secretary of Veterans Affairs. Would the counsel, beginning with appellant's counsel, enter your appearance for the record?
Brandon Steele for the veteran, Sharon Westfall.
Thank you, Mr. Steele. Secretary's counsel?
Eric Neff and Dustin Elias for the secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Neff. Nice to see you, Mr. Elias. Appellant's counsel, I understand you want to reserve 10 minutes for rebuttal?
Yes, sir.
All right, so we'll make that happen, and you can begin whenever you're ready.
Chief Judge Allen, judges, good morning, and may it please the court. This case is about whether VA may collapse discrete anatomical losses into a single award. The dispute is between two different readings. There's the Secretary's one award per category reading, where each loss within the list of Section 1114K results in one award, versus the Veterans distributive reading, where each qualifying discrete anatomical loss that's as a result of a service-connected disorder qualifies for a payment subject to the statutory cap. I would like to address a notice that the Secretary filed recently from floor remarks from Chairman Teague that suggests his reading is the correct one. The complete record attached to that, if you look at the complete record attached to what the Secretary filed, it actually doesn't support the Secretary's reading. We believe it actually undermines it. As well, the legal framework doesn't allow for floor statements to be used.
Could I jump in, right? Because if we determine that the statute is unambiguous, whichever way we go, then legislative history is helpful to, in my view, to confirm what we think maybe the meaning is, but it can't override the meaning. So I just want to start for a second with this, and just for the assembled crowd, the case concerns a special type of benefit, special monthly compensation, which is sort of on top of other benefits you can get. And what I just wanted to do is, so your view, though, of the statute, I think, renders the phrasing of the portion about creative organs somewhat odd, right? Because if I understand your view, a person would be entitled to more than one SMC award based on creative organs, whether the statute says, as it does, one or more creative organs, or one creative organ. In other words, the result would be exactly the same in your reading of this. Is that right?
I would disagree with that, Your Honor, respectfully. The statutory text itself isn't symmetrical, it's asymmetrical. There's, you know, Congress varied one hand, one foot, one eye, both buttocks, the breast tissue in combination. Uniquely, it said one or more for creative organs. One or more has a plain meaning, at least one, possibly more. If Congress was looking to limit it to just a single award, it could have actually mirrored language it used in other parts of that section. So, for example, it could have said one creative organ.
So is your position then, if the statute said one creative organ, your position would be you get only one award?
Correct, Your Honor. Mirroring the language for one hand, one foot, one eye.
Although for the one hand, one foot, for example, the statutory structure, because we look at the statutory structure as a whole.
Sure.
If you have two hands as the problem, I won't do the feet because I'm not going to flip back and show you my two feet, but two hands, the statute tells us to go somewhere else, right? Because
correct.
if you lose both hands, you get something special. Same thing with both feet, right? And because they're paired organs, that's not really what's going on, but that's the nature of it. But for the one or more creative organs, I would have thought that the most natural reading of this would be to say, if it just said a creative organ, and you had more than one creative organ affected, I think the natural reading would be to say you get more than one award. But if it says one or more, I'm not sure what the or more does, what work it really does here, because it seems like you'd reach the same result if it just said a creative organ. But you've told me that you disagree. But I'm just telling you that's where I'm coming from.
Sure, Your Honor. So, again, I would go back to the other ways that Congress could have drafted that. So it could have said one creative organ, mirroring the language for the other things. And absolutely, there's SMCM and SMCL. But for the purpose of SMCK, it's only one hand. In more extreme examples, when both hands are lost, then SMCM kicks in.
But there is, I mean, there's a discrete kind of linguistic problem, which is what would be the plural of one or more? It already seems to contain a plural, right? And if these could be kind of doubled up, as your reading suggests, how would a rater assess whether this would be a singular one or more or a plural one or more? The statute doesn't seem to have a kind of grouping mechanism to make that determination.
In terms of a rater addressing it, I think you're looking at the discrete anatomical losses. So if...
Right, but you could have, so ovaries is plural, and then, in the instance here, there were multiple organs, right? Because that would seem the one or more, okay, multiple organs, the or more, that could be a single award, or it could be it could be 96 for each one. How would a rater make that differentiation?
Sure. So the Congress made two amendments. In 1967, they changed it from a creative organ to one or more creative organs, and they added the counting instruction for each such loss. So those go hand in hand. There could have been other ways to draft either of those sections if it was only one award by category. So, for example, they could have said instead of for each such loss, Congress could have said for each such category, or they could have said for each such loss, but no more than one award per loss. To be clear, what the limitation was.
Sure, but I guess this gets back to Judge Allen's question, which is under that reading, the or more seems to really have no purpose, no use. It's just there, really serving no purpose. What would be the purpose of that language, or would it just be surplusage?
Sure, Your Honor. It signifies that more than one creative organ can qualify. If the language was kept as a creative organ, it could imply that there's only a single word. For example, if you read the M21 manual, the way the Secretary has it phrased in there is a creative organ, implying that there's only one that's possible. One creative organ, and if you're going by the category approach that the Secretary is advocating, then having one creative organ lost would only count as one.
And so you agree that fundamentally this is a question about whether the language with respect to each such loss or loss of use really the begs in terms of the arguments question, are we looking at the categories, right, each category, or are we looking at something more than that, right? Because so first of all, do you agree that's the fork in the road, so to speak?
Yes.
Okay.
Sure.
Wouldn't the most natural reading, if you have a list of categories and then a phrase that says each such loss, why wouldn't the most natural reading of that be to refer to the categories that have just been stated as opposed to looking within the categories and parsing?
I would say, Your Honor, because if you compare it to the other losses within the list, the hand, the foot, the eyes, the buttocks, those are gender-neutral groupings, and they're their own umbrella term, right? So a hand is your upper extremity, a foot is your lower extremity, as you demonstrated, Your Honor. You couldn't get your feet up there, right?
I didn't say I couldn't. I'm not that old yet. I just wasn't going to go that far on YouTube. But continue.
My apologies, Your Honor. The creative organs, though, are a gender-specific grouping, and I would look at that as being an umbrella term.
Could I stop you for a second?
Sure.
So I guess I'm having I agree with you that creative organs are gender-specific. That I agree with you. I'm trying to figure out why that would make a difference.
Because in terms of listing out, so if you were Congress writing the statute, that provision, and you wanted to capture whatever losses you could list out a laundry list, potentially, of gender-specific creative organs intermingled with gender-neutral hand, foot, et cetera, or you capture it by simply saying one or more creative organs. If you,
but wouldn't the same capturing for gender purposes, right? The same thing would be captured by, yes, you're right, Congress could have listed all the creative organs, or it could have said a creative organ. But I'm not sure the gender point gets you to the one or more point, right? Because the catch-all is creative organ. And there doesn't appear to be any dispute in this case that we're dealing with creative organs left, right, and center, right? And so I guess I'm struggling to figure out why the gender difference would matter in that context. I get you that the use of the creative organ concept gets both men and women and all of the various creative organs in their respective bodies. But I'm not sure why that is significant for statutory interpretation points.
Because it's, again, Your Honor, capturing more than one law. So if you look at the legislative history, either through the Senate report that we noticed or through what the Secretary uploaded in his Rule 30B notice. So, for example, at page 29 of his PDF, there's the floor summary of the bill. And this was given in March 1967 to the House members who were about to vote on the amending language to the statute. And it said that the change was allowing for payment for, quote, for each such anatomical loss. The floor statement at page 27 of the Secretary's filing, which is from Representative Harsha, mirrors that same language. You also have at page 68 and page 86, you have summaries. That was in August of 1967 after presumably it had been voted on and signed into law, sort of explaining how it was changing from how it used to be to how it was or how it would be. And it said the amendments would, quote, authorize the payment of the additional allowance for each such loss. So it didn't – none of those –
Well, but doesn't that – though? So the competing – you know, you submitted the Senate –
correct.
Side of things. The Secretary submitted from the House. One day after I was born, by the way, it's literally the March 15th, 1967, making me feel old. But doesn't the House, to the extent that the House committee report matters, right, it seems to be far more directly answering the question that we have, not that we're bound by the answer, because it does say that, you know, for this purpose, meaning the statute, the anatomical, the organs would be considered as a single loss.
Point of clarification, Your Honor, that's not a committee report. That was a floor statement from the chairman.
A floor statement from the chairman. And
you know, are distinctly different, though.
Well, yes and no, right? Well, they are distinctly different. You know, once you get into the world of legislative history, there are some judges who say we're not going to consider it at all. There are others that say, well, and I'll be frank, I'm part of this group, which is I'll take any help you can give me, right? And so if there's some form of legislative history that helps me confirm what I think is what the statute says on it, I'll use that. But But there are gradations of things. So a floor statement by someone who doesn't have any heft is not as strong as the chairperson of the committee, right? So there are cases that suggest that has special weight in the legislative history context. But regardless of what it means, it seems to me the Senate report or the Senate side of things that you submitted just begs the continued question of what each such loss is. Is it by category? Is it by something more specific? Well, the House document really goes to this thing of saying it's one loss. So what do we do with that?
I would say, Your Honor, again, just to sort of clarify, there is a statement from the chairman of the committee. It's a floor statement that supports the secretary's position. There are other items within that list, as I mentioned earlier, within that record that the secretary uploaded that do not support that floor statement. Again, if you were working for Congress and you were drafting the summary of the bill given to members about to vote on it, it would seem not unusual to contain that carve-out within that summary of the bill. Same thing with the Senate's report, the committee report that we uploaded. That was given to senators that were heading into the reconciliation conference with their House counterparts. We know from the legislative history that the amendments originated in the House. They were not in the Senate's version. So it would seem important to put that carve-out within the report, within the summary that was being given to senators about to head into reconciliation. I would also note that I would say the evolution of Supreme Court precedent doesn't support the use of floor statements. So you'd have, you know, something like in Chrysler v. Brown, 1979, where they rejected the use of the floor statement from the sponsor of the bill, saying that it wasn't controlling. And there, the court looked at multiple other items of legislative history in order to determine, you know, what was going on, match up to the plain text. Just a few years later, in Garcia v. U.S., the Supreme Court rejected the floor statement of even the floor manager of the bill, saying that it was not impressive legislative history. And there, they kind of put a hierarchy in place, saying it's the text, and then you get to the committee reports, and then there's sort of everything else, with the floor statements being the lowest rung of reliability.
And your view is just, I think I know the answer for both sides, but
sure.
Your view is the statute is unambiguous.
Correct.
So under your principal argument, right,
sure,
we don't need to look at, for example, the veteran canon that we interpret statutes in favor of veterans, at least, you know, assuming that canon is still in place.
Sure.
And we wouldn't necessarily need to get to legislative history to help us understand the meaning. Maybe it's confirmatory, maybe it's not. But your view is the statute is unambiguous.
Correct. My view is, or our position is, that it is unambiguous. I believe that was also
yes,
the Secretary's position.
Yes, the Secretary's position is,
yeah,
it's unambiguous in exactly the opposite direction, right?
Correct,
so that's why they, I was going to say that's why they pay us, but that was last week. This week, not so much. So.
In Garcia, the Supreme Court noted that, you know, courts should sort of confine themselves to the legislative text unless there's ambiguity or there's some extraordinary showing. But we know that the floor statement is not an extraordinary showing because the Supreme Court rejected the floor statement in that case. So therefore, an extraordinary showing must be something other than the floor statement, even by the chairman. Because going forward to ExxonMobil v. Alapata, which was something like 20, 21 years after the Garcia case, the Supreme Court viewed even statements by committee members, even the reports by committee members, with skepticism. And I would say, quote, that committee members have, quote, the incentive to attempt strategic manipulations of legislative history to secure the results they were unable to achieve through the statutory text. And so here we don't have those limitations within the statutory text. And if we go to the Federal Circuit's decision in Berry, any limitation has to be found within the text of the statute. One or more has a plain meaning, at least one, possibly more. For each such loss is the counting instruction. It doesn't say for each such loss, but no more than one award per loss or per category. It doesn't say for each such category.
Does again, that argument depend on the each loss being connected to a separate service-connected disability?
I believe the statutory text at the front end raises the service-connected disorder. And so in our argument, because in our case, the facts in our case are that there are two distinct service-connected conditions causing each loss, there could potentially be a circumstance where there's a service-connected condition causing multiple harms or multiple discrete anatomical losses. And under those facts, potentially, even though it's a single service-connected disorder because they're causing different losses, then potentially some advocate can stand before this court and make that argument. In our case, of course, it's potentially unique in that it's very specific service-connected conditions causing very specific discrete anatomical losses that have their own unique harms. And running short on time here, but I would note that in the few seconds that I have remaining, the importance here is to look at the discrete anatomical losses. Are they separate or are they the same? And if they're separate, it should be one or more. I see that my time has expired.
Thank you. Thank you. You'll have your full rebuttal time, obviously. Thank you. Mr. Neff?
I apologize for ruffling, Your Honor.
Ruffle away, so.
Appreciate it. May it please the court. The question before us today is whether 38 U.S.C. Section 1114K allows entitlement to more than one award as special monthly compensation for the loss of one or more creative organs. The Secretary's view is that this subsection only allows entitlement to one award. And this is because Congress plainly crafted subsection 1114K to provide veterans an entitlement scheme separate from the rating schedule and other awards where one can receive one additional monthly award for each category.
Before you kind of go to structure and how everything operates, can you address Mr. Steele's argument that there's no limiting language within the statute that would, in a sense, preclude his reading? Can you point to any limiting language within the statute?
Yes, Your Honor. Specifically, the category of one or more. One or more is a conjunctive. It means one or more than one. Either one can meet the criteria for that category. This is something that the court acknowledged in Berry when it was looking at P and said there's more than one way to get to this point. The court here has also acknowledged that in several instances relating to the diagnostic codes where we have disjunctives. One or more is a disjunctive. It either means one or more than one. And if we also look to the plain meaning, Your Honor,
Is that limiting language, one or more than one?
Because more than one, Your Honor, will satisfy one as one satisfies one. So it's one or more. And because we have
how does that relate to the each such loss language?
The each such loss language, Your Honor, refers back to the categories that come before it. So if we.
It doesn't say that anywhere.
No, Your Honor, but using the canons of construction, we can deduce this. If I may.
I don't think there's a comma canon of construction.
No, there's not, Your Honor, but if I may. What we have to begin with is this is acknowledged in BREA. What we have, firstly, is categories that are anatomical loss or functional loss. That includes one or more creative organs, one hand, one foot, both buttocks. Then we go to things that are inherently losses, such as blindness, deafness, and loss of the ability to speak, so aphonia. Following that, we have anatomical losses, for the breasts of a female, and then also or radiations put in them. These are all different types of losses, but not all of them are anatomical. Some of them are functional. So because we have the conjunctive, that means we have the comma, and for each such, that would have to refer back to what we're talking about in the categories, which is very similar to BREA when we were talking about the second subclause in this where it says for each such disability here too within the section refers to the categories before. So those such ases refer work similarly, Your Honor.
And so I take it that, just to button this up, you also view the statute as unambiguous, just in the opposite direction.
Indeed, Your Honor.
If we found that there was ambiguity here, in other words, that it all comes down to whether we're looking at the categories or are we looking at something sort of inside the categories, right? So we can say one or more then points to the appellant, or if we just look at the category, then one or more captures it all. And if we just say, boy, I don't know, I can't pick between the two, what would we do then sort of analytically if that's where we were?
I believe, Your Honor, the court should go for the more natural reading. The Secretary's reading is the most natural reading for one or more. It's also supported by case law from the Federal Circuit explaining that one or more plainly means at least one, which is...
Yeah, but all that begs the question, right? Because that's the fundamental thing, right? If we just looked at... So in my notes that I have here, my law clerk was good enough to put this in a memo with bullet points for each of the categories, right? So if you're looking at the bullet points and you just stop at the bullet points, you look at the bullet points and you say, each such loss, okay, I've got my bullet pointed list, right? On the other hand, appellate points out, well, but, you know, in this bullet pointed list, it says one or more, and this person has or more, and so we should give two because there's more than one. But you only get there if you actually go into the category. If you just look at the bullet point, you don't have to do that.
Correct.
And so I'm not sure there's necessarily a natural meaning. I guess what my question is getting to is if we were saying, listen, I can't pick between the two. I'm not saying that's where I am. I'm saying if we were, would the pro-veteran canon from Brown versus Gardner, would that counsel in favor of adopting the appellant's position as a matter of statutory interpretation?
No, Your Honor, because the way it's written and the way that the Secretary reads it, one or more, every veteran is treated similarly, no matter what. So in this case, Your Honor, appellant has had SMCK since 2016. She doesn't lose that. It continues.
Well, yes, but so the notion that, let's just assume Brown v. Gardner maintains as much heft as it did before the Supreme Court's decision in Rudisill. There are cases in which the canon would say, yeah, it helps this particular veteran, but it doesn't necessarily help veterans overall. But meaning in every single case, it wouldn't point in favor of a veteran. But here it would, right? Because there's no situation in which adopting the appellant's view would harm any veteran. Right?
Right, and I can understand the court's point on that position, but this is why the Secretary... So in Looper Bright, which was solicited to the court, there is an understanding in there where the Supreme Court stated that our understanding of the APA is underscored by the congressional records. And so here, the purpose of our 30B was to demonstrate that the Secretary's reading is similar to what Congress, at least the chairman of the Veterans Committee at the time, saw this act as doing. And
yeah, I was surprised by the Loper Bright reference because we're not dealing with a regulation here, right?
No,
so
sir.
Basically, you were citing that case, and you know, actually, the law students may actually even have a better understanding than Loper Bright because it's what that's being taught now. But basically, for its statutory interpretation side of things, not so much its deference side, right?
I understand, okay. Your Honor, but it also says that there is place for the agency when it's dealing with items that are specifically when it's ambit. So, for example, the granting of veterans benefits, which is what VA does and maintains those our understanding.
Do you have anything, though, that – and I should remember this, but I'm blanking. Is there a regulation that sets out the Secretary's position in the way that answers the question differently than just reading the statute would?
No, Your Honor. So we do have 38 CFR 3.350, which the court in Berry explained basically parrots what 1114K does.
Right. So how do we know what the – I mean, other than the fact – and I don't question what you were saying to me here this morning or in your written briefs, but other than your litigation position – do we, to the extent it matters, the considered view of the agency, do we have anything that we can point to for that?
I mean, outwith the discussion we're having here today, Your Honor, and Secretary's position, because this is the first time we're handling this, and absent the M21, which also states this.
You'd agree with me, the M21, which just for the folks out there is an adjudication manual for the frontline adjudicators, right, because they get millions of claims a year. That also begs the question, right? There's nothing that doesn't beg the question about whether you look at a category or you look inside a category. I just want to make sure that I'm not missing something where the Secretary says, oh, no, we've had this long-standing statement in the M21 that mirrors what I'm telling you today or something.
No, Your Honor. Our statement's based off of what Congress did with its changes from 58 to 67. Notably, in 58, the initial act itself said a creative organ, and then it had other categories, but you could only receive one SMC award even if you could meet the criteria of any of the other ones. And so when we read A and we look at the canons, a singular also means plural, so it would mean, for us, it would mean A, any. So if that language maintained in 67, we would agree potentially with appellant.
So your position really is that you're trying to be consistent, I think, which is that prior to the change in 1967, if that category had said a creative organ, then your position is that would have allowed for more than one award if more than one creative organ had been affected.
Yes, Your Honor, that is the position. And notably,
but
also.
But in 67, when one or more creative organ was added, that's when they added each such loss or loss of use, right?
Yes, Your Honor. And that would categorically look back at the other things that they place within the categories.
But it doesn't say that.
It doesn't expressly state that, Your Honor, but for example, in Huerta, this court acknowledged that when you have a conjunctive, so when you have a comma following a list and then you have a statement following it, that would refer back to the list going forward as opposed to a antecedent clause, which would be just attaching to the last end. So that's something we would probably see more in criminal law as opposed to here. However, that is how the Secretary reads it. It's grammatically accurate. It is how Congress described it, but most importantly, it is a natural reading of the plain language of the statute, Your Honor.
It's just how one person in Congress described it.
But that one person, Your Honor, was the chairman of the Veterans Committee, of which at the time there was no comparable committee in the Senate. So there could have been no debate there. In fact, the materials the Secretary provided in his 30B notice include Senate materials explaining about how they wanted to create a Senate subcommittee on Veterans Affairs.
You'll agree that our court and the United States Supreme Court, including, I think, three times in the last 4 months, has admonished that what matters is what Congress actually said in the law, not what they said about it. That, as I think they say, the actual statutory terms are the price and product of passage.
Yes, Your Honor. And for that reason, one or more, and it's plain and natural reading, and we don't need to look at Congress for that. The only purpose for bringing up the congressional record, Your Honor, was to underscore the Secretary's position, because the statement made by the Honorable Olin Teague does not add or detract from what we are saying, and that's something the court has been doing for over 100 years, the Supreme Court, that is, since at least United States versus Missouri Pacific Railroad, where it said we're not going to do statutory construction in the guise of trying to add or subtract things from the legislative record, but if it says what it says, and this says what it says, that's what it says. One or more.
That's what you're asking us to do, is add terms.
No, Your Honor. The terms are unambiguous in there. It's one or more creative organ. It means at least one. That is a category, or you can see it conjunctively, one or more than one. But if it's one or more than one meets the category. If Congress wanted to maintain it so that there was an individual ward per creative organ, it simply could have kept the criteria from the 58 law, the same in 67, but that's what it did. And because Congress changed the verbiage, we presume there was a change in intent, and we presume that there was also a change in how it works.
Do you agree that the uterus and the vagina are separate organs?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that the loss of use or the loss of those are separate disabilities?
Yes, Your Honor. But in the context, we have So, for example, when we're talking about special monthly compensation, we're talking about the diminishment of function that is not contemplated by the rating criteria under the diagnostic codes. Appellant is receiving separate ratings for her vaginal and for her hysterectomy conditions. That is clear. And even if we were to look at 38 CFR 4.116, which is where the female anatomy is, you'll see that there's a note, too, that says, footnotes in the section indicate conditions which potentially establish entitlement to special monthly compensation. However, almost any condition in the section might under certain circumstances. So there's no denial. It is in our regulation, Your Honor.
Why don't these circumstances meet that test?
So the test, Your Honor, the differences between rating under the diagnostic code, which is expressly stated here in subsection 1114K, says, in addition to the awards for A through J would be in reference to the rating schedule. So this is an award on top of it for the diminished function of the creative one or more creative organs separate from what we already pay on the diagnostic code.
Yeah, right. Okay, so for the hysterectomy, the function that's lost is the ability to procreate. But the board acknowledged that SMCK for loss of a creative organ is not limited to loss of the ability to procreate.
Yes, sir. And
the board doesn't seem to act on that acknowledgement by failing to recognize that sexual intercourse is an important function. If it involves private conduct between consenting adults, it's a fundamental right. And it's a function slash right that a veteran retains following a hysterectomy in the absence of another disability. Isn't that so?
That is correct, Your Honor. But, however, this court has also acknowledged that the functional anatomical losses pursuant to Congress are the same. So they decided that these would be both worth one SMCK awards. And if we look at the statute again, it says anatomical loss or loss of use. So the situation you've described, Your Honor, is contemplated by 1114. The court has addressed this previously, stating that these are
that just
equivalent.
Means both are covered. The loss, anatomical loss of the uterus and ovaries, and the loss of use of the vagina.
So I think I understand what you're saying, Your Honor, but the fact of the matter is the Congress did not say for every anatomical loss, get something. And then they did not, after that, say, for every loss of use, get something. So we are here for anatomical loss or loss of use. So that broadens the type of losses here. So that is favorable for the veteran, because here we don't have a loss of anatomy in one instance, and we have a loss of anatomy in the other. And here they're the same, they're treated the same, and it's one or more. And so that plays into the fact It plays into the Secretary's argument that what we're talking about here is a category. The category is disjunctive. It's one or more than one. And what we have here is a situation in which Congress contemplated this through the plain language of the statute, and it's also underscored, again, and I'm not giving this heft as the way for the pushover to push it over, but the fact is that Congress did address this, and they said that it's only one award for this category. And so the natural.
Let's talk for a second about what the board said. The board acknowledged that it's possible to receive SMCK for separate disabilities on the list as long as they affect different parts of the body. Aren't the uterus and vagina different parts of the body?
Your Honor, those are considered creative organs. As noted, that the Secretary has 4.116 explaining that everything on here, and that's female and anatomical losses, are referring back there.
There's a lot of separate body parts under 4.116.
Indeed, there are, and I have them all right here in front of me.
Me too.
But the point is, Your Honor, if we're looking to do more than one, and if we're looking at the structure and we're looking at the purpose of Section 1114K, if we have more than one hand lost, we look elsewhere in the statute. If we have more than one foot lost, we look at elsewhere in the statute. There's other combinations in which we look elsewhere in the statute. However, SMCK is the only place where one or more creative organs exists. So it is there. We can't look elsewhere. There could be the situation, for example, that a creative organ may rise to the severity contemplated by aid in attendance or bedridden. However, this is not the case. That hasn't been argued, but pointed factually here, when we're talking about loss of one or more creative unit, organs, it is only within K.
If we disagree with your statutory interpretation, do we just reverse, or is there something for the board to do that we would remand this to them to decide the nature and extent of her vaginal disability?
If I may confer, Your Honor.
Sure.
The Secretary's position is that the court should affirm the board's decision. However, if the court were to have the board redo this, the Secretary would appreciate reasons or bases for the court to apply the court's decision in the first instance.
That I don't understand. So if we assume that, so I think this is a binary choice, and if I'm wrong, you tell me, please. It's a binary choice about what the statute means. It's either it's by category, or if we say it isn't by category, it's one or more, and you can just say one or more, right? So do you agree with that? It's categorical binary in that sense.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And you don't have any quibble with the fact that both of the disabilities that we have here for the appellant concern the creative organs, right?
No, Your Honor.
Right. They're both creative organs. Okay. So if we said, hypothetically, that the board's view of the statute was wrong, that you didn't look by category, and you say one or more creative organs, and we know that the board has factually determined that the disabilities here relate to creative organs, then I'm not sure what more would the board do that we couldn't do and say, the statute means this, there's more than one, specifically two, creative organs at issue. So, I mean, I suppose we could say you do the math, but then the board would say there are two and give the two awards. So I had understood Judge Jaquith's question to be, what more would the board do if we determined that the statute meant what the appellant says as opposed to what you did?
Point taken, Your Honor. I understand the court's position, and I would believe that the board would have not much to do in that instance if the question of law is answered for them.
So we could reverse.
Yes, you could.
Right. Okay.
I guess I would. Does the party's April 2023 joint motion for remand statement that the board did not dispute that appellant has loss of use of the vagina indicate that there's no factual dispute left for the board to resolve?
With respect to that, yes, Your Honor. Well, no factual disputes. We're dealing with a legal dispute now, Your Honor, to clarify my statement.
So we could. So, and the reason at least that I'm pressing on this is as I often say in these oral arguments, is, you know, one of the three of us is actually going to have to write something. We're going to have to write something down that somebody's going to read. And so it's important to know, okay, if we go down this road, then we're going to tell the board to do this, as opposed to if we go down that road, we're going to take another point. So it sounds like the Secretary right now doesn't see any factual issues that need to be resolved, and so it's a pure legal question that we can answer and then just apply the facts that are undisputed to what we say the law is.
Yes, Your Honor, it was just wishful thinking in retrospect.
It's all right. You know, it's the journey. So there we go. Do you have anything else, Mr. Neff?
For the reasons stated, Your Honor, the Secretary humbly requests that you affirm the board's decision.
Before you sit down, Judge Stone. Thank you, Mr. Neff.
Thank
I
you,
appreciate
John.
It. Mr. Steele, you have your 10 minutes. You can use as much or as little of it as you'd like.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I would like to address a couple of points from the Secretary. He referred to or both as being conjunctive and as being disjunctive, and I'm not sure if that was potentially nerves or whether he meant that. But I would point out that or is, of course, used, I think, in two senses in this section. There's one or more, but then there's also the disjunctive repetition of or between each item within the list, right? Although the regulation doesn't mirror that, they just separate commas, the statute has that disjunctive repetition. That's what's known as a polysyndeton, I believe it's pronounced.
I'll take your word for that. So.
Sure. That's a stylistic choice. If you look at the typical compact style, right, where it's something like A, comma B, comma C, or D, that you'd see in a list, and you can see that in something like 26 U.S.C. Section 61A, which is a statute that lists the things that qualify as gross income. And it's a list of 14 items, and comma separated except for the last two items. They have the end in between the 13th and the 14th item. So here we have or between each item in the list, and if you look at style manuals, you can use the repetition of or. For example, if you were giving a speech and you wanted to set up a specific cadence or you wanted to slow something down, right, to draw attention to it. But, of course, Congress isn't legislating a speech. They're writing the text of the statute. And so in the legal sense, you're using or when you want to really draw attention to the fact that those are independent items, right? So one or more creative organs is set apart as its own thing of entitlement, separate from one hand or one foot or both buttocks.
So your point about, and I'm not going to try to do
sure.
that word, but your point about the repetitious use of,
sure.
of or, though, I mean, really is neither here nor there in my mind about this case, right? Because that would be really important if somebody had the loss of use of both buttocks and the loss of use of a foot. The point you're making now would be, well, you can get it for the buttocks and you can get it for the foot, right? But that still doesn't get us to whether you look beyond the repetitious use of or doesn't get us to the point of you're in a category and you can use one or more creative organs or you're not, right?
What I would say, though, that, Your Honor, as you're reading the list of items that are within that and understanding that they're independent of each other, once you get to that category, you're seeing what the category says. Here it says one or more creative organs. Again, there could have been a number of different ways that Congress could have drafted that. They could have said one. They could have said the reproductive system, mirroring the by the whole, not the parts language used for both buttocks. They could have used the in combination language.
Can you go back?
Sure.
Can't believe I'm going to say this. Can you go back to the buttocks for a moment?
Right. Yeah.
So the fact that it uses both, I mean, would your argument be that because both refers to the two things that could exist, right? Because as opposed to reproductive organs where you have more than two, for the buttocks, we're limited to two. And so would you say you can be entitled to two awards if you have both buttockses affected?
No, Your Honor, because the language is itself limiting. It says both buttocks. Same thing with the getting to the 25% threshold on the breast tissue. They allow for it to be in combinations, right? So a veteran, female veteran can use either of the loss of the breast tissue in combination to get to that 25% threshold. But if one loss in, say, the left breast of 25% and 30% in the right breast, that wouldn't be two different entitlements, again, because the limitation is contained within the text of the statute itself.
So you're saying that you can look inside each category. It's just when you look inside the buttocks category, it requires that both buttocks be affected. So if you only had one, that wouldn't be good enough. And once you get to both, that's all the categories. It limits to both, not one and one equals two.
Correct. That's our understanding of that provision, Your Honor.
Right. I just wanted to make sure.
Sure.
That's what I understood you say. I wanted to make sure that I got it.
Sure. The other thing I would like to address is the SMCM and SMCL, the Secretary didn't refer to it, there's specific provisions, but he talked about losing both hands, losing both feet, get you to really a higher level. I mean, he didn't mention the higher level. He just mentioned a different SMC and then said, you know, one or more creative organs, that's unique in that if you lose two, you don't get to a higher level. But that, I think, also ignores the Congress recognizing that the loss of two hands is much more extreme than losing a hand or much more extreme than losing potentially multiple creative organs. You lose your hands, you know, you have difficulty tying your tie. Potentially you can't cook for yourself, maybe you can't get dressed, maybe you have to bring somebody else in to help you with that. So you're actually getting a payment that's much higher than I think even what 100% rating is, right? So that's just Congress.
So as Barry said, if you have more than one creative organ loss or loss of use, you just get $96 more.
I don't believe that's what Barry said, Your Honor. I wouldn't read Barry to be so limiting. I think the importance of Barry...
Isn't that the statutory amount?
The statutory amount for losing any of those losses is listed in the statute as being $96. But I wouldn't... I don't read Barry as saying that that means that you can only get one award for any number of creative organs. I don't think Barry necessarily got to that.
I'm saying the opposite of that.
Gotcha.
Barry says, as their explanation of what 1114K means, is $96 and then $96 more. It's just an incremental increase.
Correct, Your Honor. I'm sorry, I misunderstood your question. Yes, Your Honor, I would agree with that, that absent any limitation expressly within the statute, and again, as you know, I went through before, there could have been any number of ways that Congress made clear that it was only looking for a single award for a creative organ, then it would be that small incremental increase. So it's recognizing that losing two creative organs is certainly tragic, but potentially not as tragic as losing both your hands. And I don't want to, of course, minimize anyone's losses here. And losing a single creative organ, while also tragic, isn't the same type of harm as losing two. Just given the OGC Precedential Opinion 589 that talks about the physiological and the psychological impact from losing the creative organ, right? So here you've got a different impact, both psychologically and physiologically, than you do between the uterus and the loss of the vaginal creative organ. In terms of the disjunctive, just circling back to that in the remaining time that I have, there is a Supreme Court case, I believe it's from 1979, it's Ryder v. Sonneton, that dealt with a disjunctive in a statute, specifically or, right? So there was a lawsuit where someone was suing a class action lawsuit against an institution, and the statute in question had business or property. And the argument was that, well, business is already subsumed by property, so those must not be two different things. But the Supreme Court said the disjunctive indicates that those are two different things. So I wouldn't say that the disjunctive use here, either between the categories or within the category itself, means that it's the same thing. Because while the Secretary kept referring to it as one or more means one, or at least one, but possibly more.
So are you claiming that just in practice,
sure,
if a veteran loses two hands or two feet, that the rater should rate them under this provision because it would be each such loss and assign them the $96 and at that point go to the other sections and then rate them according to the higher amount for the two hands or the 2 feet?
No, Your Honor. What
you're saying is that this language that you're saying is central with the disjunctive would only apply to some of these and not others.
It would
really only apply to one of these on the list.
And you should answer Judge Toth's question. You don't have to ask for extra time, and then you can wrap up.
Gotcha. Thank you, Your Honor. I would say that Congress did that drafting choice intentionally. So some of the categories are self-limiting. So one hand means one hand. It doesn't mean one or more hands.
Right, but each such loss of one hand, according to your argument, would be its own $96, right? And the fact that it were superseded by another section would be, you could rate it, and then you would, I mean, that's sort of the point. That's sort of my point, which is, I guess my question, which is, of all the types listed, they either referred you to a different section once you double them up, or, as Judge Allen was pointing with the buttocks, like, it's conceptually impossible to double them up. And then we have this one, right? Why would this be the only statutory provision that is capable of being doubled up?
Because it's the one that is gender-specific and an umbrella term.
Okay, and I guess I guess at that point it would kind of revert back to the initial question, which is what then do we do with the or more? Right? It would really just be one, 96 per.
Well, again, between the one award per category reading of the secretaries versus the veterans distributor reading. And so if you were looking to change it so that you were conveying to the VA that you wanted any number of creative organs to trigger entitlement, I think the natural reading is to draft it as one or more.
We could have done a creative organ, right? And then the question would just be what qualifies, right, as a creative organ. This seems to be, right, it's singular or plural. It's the number of creative organs that would be entitled to an award.
So if you go back to the Federal Circuit's decision, I believe it's pronounced Sursley, they discussed 1 U.S.C. 1. And in that, it was the question there was a clothing allowance. And so did a clothing allowance mean one, which was the secretary's position, or was it plural? And so in that case, they did say that it was plural. And given the 1 U.S.C. 1, which is – it provides a definition section, right? And so that the singular can include the plural can include the singular. So in that sense, Congress would have been changing from a creative organ meaning one or more creative organs to one or more creative organs, which seems, I guess, in a sense, redundant, except that if you look to how the Secretary still applies it today in his M21, he still has it listed as a creative organ. He hasn't changed it to one or more creative organs. And so, again, I think the plain meaning, going back to it, and I don't believe the Secretary's ever cited to a canon of construction that would say that if you have one or more and you combine it with three such laws, that means only once in any one case.
Okay, what's the name of that case?
Sursley. So Sursely. Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Steele.
Thank you.
And thank both counsel for the very helpful arguments for the court. So just for everybody's here, in 1 second I'm going to say that the case is submitted, and then we're going to do something that's a tradition of our court that we've adopted from the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit, which is we're going to come down and we're going to greet counsel. And our clerk of court is going to gavel us out, but we're going to stay right here and we're going to answer any questions that you have. All right, so with that, the case is submitted.